expecting heavy downpours all day today.
You're a builder. You build. It's literally in your job title.
Woo! Let's hit it.
A little rain isn't stopping you. Not today, not any day. Shouldn't your flashing tape be working through it all too? Only Frog Tape Pro Grade Flashing Tape's high-performance acrylic adhesive sticks, re-sticks, and stays stuck, even on the roughest surfaces in rain, snow, heat, and more. So you stay in control when it matters most. Show weather who's boss with Frog Tape Pro Grade Flashing Tape.
CBS Eye on the World, I'm John Batchelor. To Joseph Sternberg, member of the editorial board of the Wall Street Journal, he writes political economics column. He's based in London. And his most recent observation about the bank that failed, the Silicon Valley Bank, and the remarks by the former Silicon Valley Bank CEO, Greg Becker, the remarks in front of a congressional committee, the Senate Banking Committee, are both revelatory and I think the British word is gobsmacked. Joe, a very good evening to you. If I understand correctly your column, Mr. Becker's explanation for what happened is the federal regulators told him not to worry about rising interest rates during the pandemic. How is that an excuse for what happened to his bank? Good evening to you.
Hey, John. Well, I mean, I thought that this whole testimony was so interesting about what happened here because some of the senators, believe it or not, were asking the important question of Mr. Becker, which is interest rates were very low for an extended period of time. Why did Silicon Valley Bank not prepare itself for the likelihood that those interest rates were going to have to rise at some point? Because remember, that's ultimately what created the problem that led to the bank's collapse was the fact that they had organized their balance sheet for a period of sustained low rates and were caught by surprise when rates started going up, and that created a series of solvency and liquidity problems. And I thought that former CEO Gregory Becker's response to that was really interesting. It was basically, well, we didn't prepare for rising interest rates because we took the Federal Reserve at its word. I mean, remember the message that we were all getting from Federal Reserve Chairman Jerome Powell throughout 2020 and 2021 was that interest rates were going to stay low for an extended period of time. And in fact, Chairman Powell was priming the economy to expect that interest rates were going to stay longer than the market would ordinarily think might be appropriate for a long period of time. And you know, that explanation, that it's called forward guidance from the Fed, took several forms, one of which was Mr. Powell's constant insistence that the inflation that we were seeing throughout that period was only transitory. So the Fed was not going to respond as you would normally expect it to do by raising interest rates to fight the inflation. And so the real revelation from this hearing about Silicon Valley Bank is that the bank paid attention to that. And I think that that exposes a big problem the Fed has gotten itself and the economy into now, because it's all well and good for senators and the rest of us to say, well, banks should have prepared for rates to rise anyway. But think for a minute of what that means. That means that you have to condition everyone in the economy not to believe what the chairman of the Federal Reserve is telling them about monetary policy. And that, in fact, that might be a wise thing to do, to not believe that. But that is a big credibility problem for the Fed if all of a sudden we're saying that, yes, I mean, the Fed will, you know, the chairman will do these press conferences and they'll do all of these statements and they'll tell us what we're going to do, but then we should not believe that.
You mentioned in your column that you've read Ben Bernanke's book, so we don't have to. What in his book reveals to you this quandary of listening to the Federal Reserve and not being deaf to the Federal Reserve?
Well, I mean, one of the reasons that the Fed has become so talkative, one of the reasons that they do those press conferences after every meeting, which started on Ben Bernanke's watch, one of the reasons that the statements have gotten longer and they release all of the meeting minutes and the board members give all of these speeches all the time, is that especially under Ben Bernanke, the Fed adopted what's called forward guidance as a policy tool. And the point of forward guidance was to communicate to investors and the economy as a whole that the Fed was going to stick to a particular policy, particularly a very low interest rates, for an extended period of time. And one of the functions of forward guidance was to tell markets that the Fed would stick to that policy, even if it might start feeling inappropriate, even if the market would ordinarily start to anticipate that the Fed might raise rates soon. So, Bernanke talks about this a fair bit in his most recent book about modern, the modern practice of monetary policy. And he praises forward guidance as a tool precisely because it does head fake markets in this way, and therefore allegedly makes interest rates and financial conditions easier for the Fed to manipulate. But he completely sidesteps this question of why the market might ordinarily expect the Fed to do something like raising interest rates. And guess what? It's because if you have the kind of inflation that we had in 2021 and 22, the market would expect the Fed to raise rates because the Fed should be raising rates when that inflation is starting to pick up pace. And so we see with Silicon Valley Bank the dangers that the Fed has created by convincing everyone to doubt their own instincts and then to ultimately doubt the Fed, because the Fed did end up changing its mind and raising rates very rapidly.
You introduced Fed credibility. What is it, Joe, and is it still with us?
Well, I mean, credibility is the secret sauce of central banking. It's the sort of thing where you can't precisely define it, but you know it when you see it. And I think that people typically think of credibility in terms of markets believing that the central bank takes seriously its task of keeping inflation under control. And then people also, markets taking seriously what the central bank says the policy is. And when the Fed says the policy will be something in the future, people taking that seriously as well. And so I think that, this is becoming the big issue, because for a long time, with the forward guidance, these promises that the rates would stay low for a long time, the Fed was banking on its credibility, on the ability, on the willingness of markets to take those pronouncements seriously, even when the market's own better judgment said something else. Increasingly, that's in question. And now we're saying that to protect your bank from financial disaster, you have to disbelieve the Fed.
Fed credibility is my transition to the story by Greg Hipp in the Wall Street Journal in these last hours about a new presentation from Ben Bernanke, former chair of the Federal Reserve, 2006 to 2014, and Olivier Blanchard, former chief economist at the International Monetary Fund. I urge everybody to read Greg Hipp's story, but this is my version. The reason we're living with 5% inflation and very far from the 2% goal of the Federal Reserve is because of the pandemic, the low interest rates, and then the stimulus from Congress, if I read this column correctly. The Fed, of course, told us at that time, according to Greg Hipp's reporting, according to your reporting, according to the reporting I remember, that these rise in interest rates that we experienced at the beginning of 22 and all through 22 were transitory, were supply chain driven. Is that your measure? Did the Federal Reserve get it right and then was surprised, or did the Federal Reserve get it wrong and we were surprised?
No, I think the Fed very much got it wrong. And what's interesting about this Bernanke and Blanchard paper is that they are attempting to justify their purported surprise that inflation took off by suggesting that this was some novel phenomenon, that it was an unusual combination of the supply chain shocks in the first stage of the pandemic and then the fiscal stimulus in the later stage. But it was pretty clear very early on that we were going to run into problems, and there was a lot of evidence very early on that we were running into problems. So, for example, I think that blaming supply chain difficulties, I mean, there obviously were supply chain problems, quite a lot of them in the early stages of the pandemic, and those have lingered for an extended period in some industries. But that doesn't explain why there was overall inflation instead of what you would ordinarily expect, where if a shortage of one thing caused the price of it to go up, that would force people to reduce their consumption of other items, which might cause some of those prices to go down. So, you know, it's definitely true that there were these supply chain problems, but that doesn't explain why you could see at the time that there was not an adjustment in relative prices. Instead, you were seeing prices for everything increasing at the same time, which is usually a sign of a problem. And I think that the other thing that I think is a bit of a problem with this analysis from Bernanke and Blanchard is the sequencing, because there was fiscal stimulus right from the beginning. You know, they talk about stimulus in terms of the $1.9 trillion package that Congress passed much later in the cycle with the pandemic. But almost from the beginning, there were all kinds of stimulus supports, like extended unemployment benefits and enhanced unemployment benefits, which compensated people more generously for not working. Various rent and student debt forgiveness programs, those checks that we got deposited into our bank accounts throughout the first few months of the pandemic. So there was a lot of fiscal stimulus early on, which, again, you could have foreseen from the fact that relative prices were not adjusting to the supply chain shortage, that fiscal assistance already was creating inflationary pressure in the economy. But I think that there's a move afoot in some corners of the economics world to try to downplay that, because it's embarrassing then for them not to have seen it coming. They prefer to argue that this was such an unusual circumstance that no one could have picked up these signals.
Joe, is there a precedent for giving money away at the scale of the stimulus packages, the Trump administration, the Biden administration, and all the forbearances? Is there a model that you can look to and say, see, it didn't lead to inflation? Because this late in the game, it certainly looks like that is a driver, giving cash out to people who are stuck at home.
It had never been done before, and it had never been done before specifically in these circumstances, because remember the two things that were going on. On the one hand, there were all of these assistances to individual businesses, but much more so to households, in the form of the enhanced unemployment benefits, the checks that went out, all of the rest of it. At the same time, the government was actively shutting down the supply side of the economy, not allowing businesses to open or operate normally, making it impossible for people to work, which was in fact part of the rationale for all of this assistance. We have never been in a situation where there was such a generous subsidy for not producing. And that ultimately was the big problem here, that we created all of these income supports on the demand side of the economy without allowing the supply side of the economy to adjust. And that wasn't even the case during the Great Depression, when you first saw the offering of more generous welfare benefits in the U.S., because at least in that period, there were not policies of this magnitude making it absolutely impossible for supply to ever respond to the demand that was being brought online.
Final question on this topic. Has Mr. Powell explained how he missed it or why he missed it? Has he been as candid as, say, Mr. Becker about the mistake?
No, I think that's one of the great frustrations, and increasingly it's going to be a political problem for the Fed. I mean, the most Mr. Powell ever said is that it was time to retire the word transitory. But they've never explained exactly how they made that mistake. There's a little bit of debate about, how that mistake happened, why they got it so wrong. Not nearly enough debate. And that's really important, because that suggests that their models of how the economy operates are all wrong. They're making policy right now with all of these interest rate increases and other policies. It would be nice to know that there's a little bit of introspection about where their models might be mistaken and how much they actually know about the economy and what effect their policies are having.
Joseph Sternberg, member of the editorial board of the Wall Street Journal, he's in London. We're going to British politics because there's a long bill of particulars against the ruling Tory party with an election perhaps next year. This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Nash.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.